Our next case this morning is number 073885, United Steel Paper Forestry Rubber Manufacturing Energy Allied Industry and Service Workers against the National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Breen.
Yes, thank you. I'm Richard Breen, the United Steelworkers Legal Department of Pittsburgh, representing petitioner. The board's position here is very simple in Jones Plastic, that an employer need not make an enforceable promise of permanent employment to create a permanent replacement. That's wrong for two reasons. First, it is absolutely contrary to the plain words of LNAP, the Supreme Court's 1983 case. Secondly, it thwarts the strikers' reinstatement rights under Fleetwood. It destroys the replacement's rights under Belknap.
I may suggest you might want to raise your voice just a little bit. That's very good at recording and not so good at amplifying.
Oh, fine. Thank you.
Now, Mr. Breen, let me ask you a question here. Actually, I have two questions. One is, it seems to me that Belknap is about a somewhat different problem in this process than your case, because in Belknap, the question is, if somebody's been told he's a permanent replacement, can he then bring a lawsuit under state contract law, or is it heads I win, tails you lose, almost? Whereas in this case, we've got a different situation, so of course we should be guided by Belknap, but it may not be the end of the discussion. So that's my first point. My second point is that the board, as I read their opinion, essentially is saying that there's nothing in Belknap or its rules about replacement of striking workers that tells employers that they can't have an at-will employment process, and that we really have to be more nuanced in our understanding of what these various terms are. So if you could address those.
Both points, yes. The point of Belknap is this, and what the board is saying is that basically the words we take from Belknap are dicta, that they don't speak to what is happening here. That's incorrect. That what happens in Belknap is this, that the employer makes an argument of machinist preemption, which is that the state cannot regulate the weapons used in a labor dispute. And what does the court do in reply? They have to look at what the character is of a permanent promise of employment. And what they say is federal law insists on the permanent promise. Where does it come from in federal law? It comes from Fleetwood. That they specifically say in the opinion that the legitimate and substantial business justification of Fleetwood is supplied by this permanent promise. And then what do? They talk about the burden argument of the employer. What the burden argument is this. If you actually enforce a state court lawsuit for promise of permanent employment, we can't use the weapon. And here's what they say. Arguments, this quote, this is page 500. Arguments of entertaining suits by innocent third parties for breach of contract or for misrepresentation will burden the employer's right to hire permanent replacements are no more than arguments that this is war, that anything goes, and here most importantly, and the promises of permanent employment that under federal law the employer is free to keep if it so chooses are essentially meaningless. What they're saying is it has to be an enforceable contract. Now you look at what they do. The second preemption argument is if you actually enforce this, let this lawsuit go forward, you'll interfere with settlements, strike settlements. Okay? They create a contract that does away with that preemption argument. It's part of the holding. But here's what you do. You offer a contract to the replacement that says you can be terminated. But you can be terminated to permit your return of a replacement pursuant to a board order or strike settlement. Okay? That gives the employer the right to remove the person without liability in that circumstance. If you're not in that circumstance outside the penumbra, there's no board order. There's no strike settlement. That employer does not have the right to discharge the replacement without liability. And here's what the at-will offer does. If you look at the at-will offer in Jones Plastic, three sentences. The first sentence, we offer you a job as a permanent replacement. Second sentence, you're hired at will. You can be fired for any reason. Third sentence, we also can fire you pursuant to a board order or strike settlement. What that offer does, it swallows up the Belknap right.
Don't I recall from reading this thing that everybody got rehired?
Yes.
Well, what's the big beef?
Well, I think it really is a matter of law that in the wake of Belknap.
Well, we're sitting here discussing something in the abstract, but nobody got hurt. Everybody.
Well,
got their
people,
job,
no, they did. They lost about a month or 6 weeks of pay before they came back. But the
most
issue
of that
really
was voluntary, if I recall correctly. Too.
Pardon me?
Most of that was voluntary, too. They didn't show up.
Right. They drifted on to other jobs during a long strike. But I think what the issue really is the removal of the prior understanding of Belknap. The way Belknap was understood was Target Rock, which was because, and here's the, to return to this, here's what happens in that offer. The employer has properly taken to itself in the third sentence, okay, you need a board order or strike settlement. But the middle sentence swallows up the rights that replacement otherwise would have had. Because that employer, there's a great hypothetical, not even a hypothetical, an instance in Belknap. They say that if a replacement in a situation where there is no strike settlement, no board order, should lose his job or her job to permit the return of a more efficient or skilled striker, that person would have a lawsuit against the employer. What the second sentence allows the employer to do is to take away that right. Because if you can discharge for any reason, with or without cause, that reason would include the little nub of rights that Belknap gave the replacement.
And could I turn this around a
sure.
little bit? Because it seems to me that there was a concern in Belknap and also something going on here that on the one hand, if the employer has to hire permanent replacements, not merely temporary ones, the employer will think twice about whether it wants to marry, you know, these
right.
new people, whether it wants to have them permanently on its labor force. So that affects the bargaining balance between the union and the employer in one sense. And the other thing, I guess, is that if this person if the employer can pick and choose which of these so-called permanent replacements is going to keep, it could almost cherry-pick from the striking workers. It's going to invite you back because you haven't been a union agitator, and it's going to invite you back maybe because you're just terrific at your job, and it's going to invite you back, but it's not going to invite back the troublemakers or
right.
something. It's going to pick and choose in a way that Belknap doesn't seem to contemplate. Is that the balance that you see?
Yeah, in the sense that that's what we're saying is that you've disturbed the balance that Belknap created. Belknap made a real contractual right, a clear, bright-line test, actually. And the test for being a permanent replacement is, does that person have a contractual right to remain in the job when a striker has made an offer for reinstatement, not pursuant to a board order or strike settlement? If you don't have that right, you're a temporary replacement. It's clear and manageable. What the board's rule does is that it does away with the Belknap right. And to me, the tragic thing here is that we gave the argument to the board. We strongly pushed this point. Look, that in Target Rock with Chairman Higgins' concurrence, that there's a point to preserving at-will employment. No one's saying you have to do away with it to keep the Belknap doctrine. The way you preserve the two beautifully is this is the offer. You are hired under these terms. You can be fired for any reason other than to permit the return of a striker in the absence of a board order or strike settlement. What did the board do? They acknowledged, you're right, that creates a permanent replacement. Who cares? We don't use magic words. Well, you have to use magic words because what they've done, in effect, is overrule Belknap. And I think, that's, in a sense, the way we wrote our brief, it's not about Target Rock. That what they have really done is they have overruled Belknap. They've taken away the Belknap protections from replacements, and that has the effect for our people, the strikers. It takes away their Fleetwood rights. Because the way it actually works is, if that person is not permanent and they have the right to really control whether or not a replacement is permanent, they can manipulate that to keep our people out, to keep the strikers out.
Now, they make a discrimination argument, though, because since no collective bargaining agreement had been reached yet at this particular workplace,
right,
the strikers themselves were at will.
Oh, the
employees.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe you could, the irresistor argument.
It's just plain wrong. It just makes no sense. So what Erie Resister involves is this. It's a grant of 20 years of super seniority to crossover strikers and permanent replacements. And the board says it's inherently destructive of Section 7 rights because it penalizes the right to strike in perpetuity for each and every seniority event that occurs in the plant. Now, their argument is this. Well, if somehow it's an at-will plant, and everybody's at will. For example, there's not a contract yet, a first contract situation.
Which is this case.
It's true.
I don't know why we have this case, by the way, because it's in Tennessee, but never mind. That's don't need to worry about. I'm sorry, you were talking about Erie Resister.
Erie Resister.
Yes.
Now, they're saying that it's Erie Resister because a striker doesn't have the right to have the Belknap right to keep a job and opposed to a striker. It makes no sense because Erie Resister deals with discrimination against recalled strikers in perpetuity, not discrimination vis-a-vis an unrecalled striker. And it's not an Erie Resister problem that you give the permanent replacement that small kernel of rights the Supreme Court says he has, not to be exercised in perpetuity, but simply vis-a-vis the strikers in this one circumstance until they're all recalled.
Can I ask, I know you're in your rebuttal time, but I have one question, which is it your understanding in a plant where the people are all employees at will, that notwithstanding that, if there is, let's say, a union organizing campaign going on, that the employer is not permitted to terminate one of the employees at will because of his union organizing activity?
No. That would be an NLRA violation.
That's what I mean. I mean, so there's an external source of law that would come in if the employer said, you're the organizer, you're out, even though
well, that's correct.
It's an at will.
But what they would do here, okay, and the real issue, again, is with Belknap, because what you've done is you've taken away their Belknap rights. And when you have the employer able to pick and choose, it allows all sorts of hidden discrimination. It's not the bright line test. Great. No, I said thank you then.
Thank you, Mr. Breen. We'll hear now from Mr. Flesher.
May it please the court, my name is David Fleischer, representing the National Labor Relations Board. And our position is that Belknap decided an issue which Belknap simply did not deal with the issue of what constitutes a permanent replacement. No one in Belknap was contending that the replacements there were anything but permanent. And the Belknap rights that permanent replacements have is simply this, a right to whatever cause of action, state the law of the particular state they're employed in may give them for breach of an employment contract. It does not give them any federal law right. It merely holds that whatever state law rights they may have are not preempted by federal law.
Mr. Fleischer, let me ask you this question. I mean, in some ways, it has struck me that the board's position and that of the dissenting members aren't terribly far apart, but it does seem to me that if you're going to be literal about what at-will employment is, and I think every state is the same on this point, at-will means that an employer can terminate somebody for any reason whatsoever, as long, obviously, as it's not prohibited by the United States Constitution or something like that.
Or the National Labor Relations Act, or the statute.
But the board seems to concede almost that if, suppose the following situation. Jones Plastic hires one of these replacements, and the human resources manager comes up to the replacement and says, "We've decided to terminate you because we would like to hire in your place one of the people who was out on strike and is now ready to come back. So you're fired." Is that okay?
Well,
I mean, it's employment at will, in your view. So any reason whatsoever?
Well, whether the replacement has a cause of action under state law is really not something for the board to decide. It's our view that may have a bearing on whether the replacement was ever a permanent replacement in the first place.
Right, so let me just follow up on two of the things that you're saying then. You seem to be saying that even in a situation like this one, if one of these replacement people was told by the human resources manager, "We've now decided to fire you because we'd rather take Steve here back, who was one of the people out on strike," that as far as it goes, that would be perfectly all right, in spite of all of this language that it was quote-unquote permanent employment, because it was permanent employment at will. And you also seem to be suggesting, I think, that there would be no claim under state law, because it was employment at will. One of the replacement worker who has now been fired brings a lawsuit and is told, "Sorry, you lose. You were an employee at will." And I think your opponent's position is that has collapsed the definition of temporary and permanent into just one box. They aren't even different anymore.
Well, assuming for the sake of argument that there's no state cause of action, which our point is that in this case, there's no suggestion by either the union or amicus that the first and third sentences of the employment contract, if they stood alone, would not make a permanent replacement. Their contention is that the second sentence by itself precludes permanent status,
and we disagree with that, obviously. Clearly you do, but what I'm trying to get at is it seems to me the existence of that middle sentence means that, I want to make two points. First of all, means that there really is no permanence about the employment, since the case I have posited could happen, that as soon as the unconditional offer to return to work is submitted, your company could go to one of these so-called permanent replacements and say, "We've decided to fire you because we'd rather have one of the former strikers." And I guess the other point, I keep kind of losing my train of thought on this other point. I'll have to think of it in a minute because...
Okay, well, I'll go on. If you think of it, you may interrupt whenever you like.
She knows that.
No.
Oh, I know what it is. It seems to me that one of the debates between you and your opponents is the question whether this at-will language is even relevant evidence to take into account in determining whether these replacement people are permanent or temporary. And the majority of the board seems to think it's not even relevant, whereas the dissenting members of the board think that it's really quite relevant. It may not be the only thing. There may be other evidence, but that it's highly relevant.
Well, it's not necessary to go so far as to say that it's not relevant. It's enough, and because in this case there is nothing else that would detract from the proof of permanent status, and therefore our view is that the only basis to reverse the board here would be to establish what amounts to a per se rule that if you have at-will language without an express disclaimer of the right to fire to make way for a striker, then you can't have permanent status. And contrary to the union, we submit that this affects neither the striker's Fleetwood rights nor the replacement's Belknap rights. Starting with Fleetwood, Fleetwood holds that strikers are entitled to reinstatement unless there's legitimate and substantial business justification. It goes on, however, to say that the hiring of permanent replacements without more is and as long as they're still employed when the strike ends, is legitimate and substantial business justification. And the reason this is so is that it is because an employer may have to offer permanent in the sense of longer than the duration of the strike employment to get people to cross a picket line to begin with.
You know, that may be true, but I don't understand why the board has been so opposed to the concept behind the language that the union says it would be perfectly happy with, namely the concept that in order to be permanent, you can be at will, but just like you can't fire an at will employee because of his race, you also can't fire for this one particular reason. That would be an exception to the general idea of at will employment. But I don't know why the board has dug in so much on that, since it preserves the employer's right to structure its workforce at will, and it also assures whatever permanence may mean in the general at will context.
Well, to begin with, it would require proof of a second legitimate and substantial business justification beyond what
Why?
Beyond the one mentioned in Fleetwood. There would also have to be the additional business justification that the employer was afraid of a lawsuit if it didn't keep the replacements. That has never been a consideration in striker reinstatement cases.
I don't understand that, though, because you know, the union has suggested a couple of different ways this concept could be phrased, but it seems to me it just requires, an indication, just as you can't override a board order or a strike settlement, you would not discharge the replacement to permit the return of a striker. It's just, you know, it's a way of assuring what passes for permanence in the at-will environment. You make a complexity argument, but I don't see what's so complex about it.
Well, it's complex and it doesn't...
Why?
It doesn't really give the replacement any more assurance or any less than he has to begin with. It's conceded under Belknap that the replacement can be told, we can fire you to bring back a striker if we do it through a settlement with the union, and telling him we then can't do it by ourselves, but we can do it if the union agrees, which the union would be only too happy to agree, is not very reassuring to any replacement, and it's hard to see how the one formulation is any more protective of whatever Belknap rights the replacement has than the other. But the bottom line is that in replacement versus striker situations, it's always been a one-step inquiry. Were the replacements told in some language, in some form, that they were permanent? The union wants to make it a two-step inquiry that you then go beyond that and determine whether under state law the replacement would have the right to sue for breach of contract if he wasn't kept on. This has never been the law. No board or court decision, with the possible exception of the now repudiated Target Rock, has ever interpreted Belknap that way. No board or court decision.
But doesn't this, it seems like a straw man to me, because the union has given you a lot, actually, by saying that there can be at-will employment, that you don't have to have something like, you know, a five-year contract with Jones Plastic, or you don't even have to have a CBA that says you can only be terminated for cause. You can be all at will, and they can decide they don't like your hairdo the next day, or they can decide, you know, that you're an obnoxious kind of guy to have around, or they can decide whatever they want. The only thing they can't decide is we're going to fire you because we'd rather have a union replacement, you know, or we'd rather have one of the striker, I should say, because they're still... I don't have a CBA. We'd rather have a striker replacement, and that preserves this distinction between permanent and temporary in the context of at-will employment. It seems
well,
like
but
a
their
lot
position
there.
Is also that any time you use the terrible words at-will employment without expressly disclaiming the right to fire them to make room for a striker, you're sending him the opposite message.
You're sending him the message that he's temporary.
We think that that overrides, we think that that not only overrides all past decisions, it's not required by Belknap. Belknap says, without limiting the reason, in footnote 8 of Belknap, that the offer and promise of permanent employment are conditional does not render the hiring any less permanent if the conditions do not come to pass. All hirings are to some extent conditional. In your hypothetical, if they actually fire him to make room for a striker, maybe he was never permanent, but the mere possibility that it might happen is a different and that they haven't disclaimed it is a different matter.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fleischer. How much time does Mr. Breen have? Thank you.
I think Mr. Fleischer's last comment shows the weakness and absolute vulnerability of the board's argument, because what it's really saying is that the Belknap promise under the board's formulation can really be illusory, that it's a promise that they, if they care to, they can adhere to. When he says, for example, well, you'd become temporary when they actually fire you for the prohibited Belknap reason, then you're temporary. And what that gives away is that's the point, that under the formulation of the board, it's the employer who can decide whether or not that person will stay or go, whether they're permanent, whether they're temporary. It's an illusory promise. It doesn't bind the company to do anything. It can do it freely as it will. And that's the problem. And in the Penn versus Ryan Steakhouse case, the Seventh Circuit made clear an illusory promise can't be the basis of a valid contract. And that's the problem of what's going on here. Unless something like what we propose is adopted, it's an illusory promise. And I'd like to read just one thing briefly from our brief. This is the very simple promise, and we don't see it as something that deters people from taking the job. It's quote, this is the three-sentence Jones Plastic like this offer, condensed. I understand that my employment with Jones Plastic may be terminated by myself or by Jones Plastic at any time, with or without cause, for any reason other than to permit the return of a striker, unless the return of such striker is required by a strike settlement agreement reached between Jones Plastic and USWA Local Union 224, or by order of the National Labor Relations Board. It puts it in a nutshell, something easily understood and which we urge the board to adopt. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Breen. Our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.